today to Super Tuesday and beyond. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, working on this post covering finance and property news and politics and other things. And today I'm joined by Salvatore Babones, who is the Associate Professor at University of Sydney. Hello.
Hi, Martin. Thanks for having me on.
Great to have you here. And we're going to look at the US elections and all of those great things which are happening over there at the moment.
Well, my main qualification being that I'm American.
Well, you tick from me.
I'll also plug in and my book from 2017 on U.S. politics, The New Authoritarianism, Trump Populism and the Tyranny of Experts, was all about the 2016 campaign. And of course, here we are to talk 2020 campaign.
Right. Now, I want to sort of just put it out there. Is there anybody on, you know, the Democratic side of politics who can beat Trump?
Anybody on the Democratic side could beat Trump. And I think this is something that a lot of outsiders forget, is that U.S. politics is knife edge. You know, I mean, Trump barely squeaked through in 2016. It was not a runaway victory by any means. And because you see electoral maps in the US that make the map look all red or all blue, it looks like more of a victory than it really is. Of course, Hillary Clinton won the popular vote against Trump. This time, who knows? I mean, the economy is doing very well. That's a benefit for Trump. But if the economy tanks, if the stock market continues down, that could harm him. But you know, look back to a year like 1980 when Jimmy Carter was up for re-election and there was a hostage crisis in Iran. And every night on television, there were the signs up saying, day 900 of the hostage crisis. Well, something like that could happen. You never know in U.S. politics. So it's going to be close. No matter who it is, it's going to be close and anyone could win.
Right. So it is a live election. That's the first point then. And then I guess the second point is There's a long queue of applicants for the job, as it were, from the Democratic side. And that's what we're in the middle of at the moment.
Well, I think Australians need to realize this. I've had lots of Australian friends talk to me about how Bernie Sanders is walking away with the Democratic nomination. Well, he only had, going into today's South Carolina primary, we're recording this on Sunday, going into the South Carolina primary, Sanders had just 45 delegates. Now, that's out of 3,979 delegates to the convention. It's not over yet. And in fact, the big day is coming up Tuesday. That's what we call Super Tuesday. It's when 14 states plus American Samoa vote. And Super Tuesday is responsible for more than one third of all of the delegates to the U.S. Democratic nominating convention, which will be in June. So really, we'll start to see results Tuesday, Wednesday, Australian time.
Okay.
Until then, all bets are off.
Right. But we know Biden is doing a little better in South Carolina, as expected, right?
Right. Well, Joe Biden has long connections with South Carolina and the Democratic Party establishment. South Carolina is more of a machine state in that endorsements and getting people to polls matters more. States like Iowa and New Hampshire are very anti-democratic machine politics. They're states where people very much want to vote their mind, and getting an endorsement might actually harm you as opposed to help you. In South Carolina, there's much more of an emphasis on getting people to the polls, on being well organized and having endorsements. And in fact, a last minute endorsement in South Carolina did seemingly put Biden over the edge, but it looks like he got more than 50% of the votes. This is the first true victory in a primary. I mean, the previous primaries, nobody won 50% of the votes in any of them. They're all 30 to 20 to 19. This is the first primary where someone is likely to actually win the state, so to speak.
Okay. And I guess that then takes us forward to Super Tuesday. And as you say, there's multiple states, large number of votes, there for the taking. How does the demographic profiles go across Super Tuesday? Is it a collection of diverse states?
It is states all over the country. I'll rattle them off for you. Alabama, Arkansas, California, Colorado, Maine, Massachusetts, Minnesota, North Carolina, Oklahoma, Tennessee, Texas, Utah, Vermont, Virginia. It's all over. But the ones that really matter, number one, California. I mean, California chooses 415 delegates in this nominating primary. on Tuesday. Texas chooses 228 delegates in its primary on Tuesday. So these are the two big prizes, California number one. Now, only one of the major candidates in the Democratic primary is from California. That's Tom Steyer. We haven't heard a lot about Tom Steyer. He's been kind of the unlucky number seven in the debates. He got very little time to speak. He's qualified for the debates, but just barely. He's a hedge fund billionaire. Before Mike Bloomberg entered the race, he was the billionaire trying to buy the nomination. But of course, you know, that moniker has now slipped off, that mantle has slipped off his shoulders. He's actually from California. That might benefit him there. He actually focused his campaign on South Carolina. And so he's actually done well in South Carolina. He hasn't placed in any of the Democratic primaries to date, but it looks like he's coming in third in South Carolina after Biden and Sanders, the two big name candidates. No one's from Texas in this race. And as far as these kind of racial and ethnic divisions go, I think people make too much of that in U.S. politics. I mean, Barack Obama was a one-off, the first black candidate for president. Of course, he won the black vote by a 99% landslide. But after that, I don't think that race and ethnicity matters so much anymore. I mean, let me put that in context. Almost no one has mentioned the fact. I mean, everyone talks about identity politics. Yet if you listen to all of the U.S. commentary, virtually no one mentions that we have among the, let's say, eight major candidates, we have two Jewish candidates, Bernie Sanders and Mike Bloomberg. We have a gay candidate, Pete Buttigieg. We have three women candidates, Elizabeth Warren, Amy Klobuchar, Tulsi Gabbard. We even have a Samoan candidate. Tulsi Gabbard is a Hindu. Elizabeth Warren could even be called a Native American candidate, although she's now backtracked from that. And yet none of this gets mentioned. I mean, we haven't even heard these mentioned. Now, if we were talking 20 years ago, it would have been all over the press. Could a Jewish man become president? Instead, all of the debate on Bernie Sanders has been, can a socialist become president? His Jewish identity simply no longer matters. So I think we focus too much on dividing up the electorate by race and sex, when in fact people vote for who they like, not for who they look like.
Right. And the younger end of the electorate looks as though they quite like Sanders. That seems to be what I'm reading from some of the polling.
Well, they quite like his policies. Bernie Sanders, of course, has come out for Medicare for all. He is also in favor of wiping clean all student loan debt. And thank you, Bernie. I'm still paying, in Australian dollar terms, about $1,000 a month for my U.S. Student loans. So it would be great for me, although I'm almost finished. So I wish you'd come along 20 years earlier, Mr. Sanders. So he has a lot of giveaways for the young that I think has made him very popular among young voters. Of course, he's 78. He's the oldest, well, roughly tied with Mike Bloomberg for being the oldest in the race. Sanders is 78. Bloomberg, 78. Joe Biden is 77. So they're certainly the grandpa crowd in the race. No offense to grandpas. But he's been popular among young people. So has Tom Steyer, the California hedge fund millionaire. Pete Buttigieg, of course, is 38 himself. A lot of young people like Tulsi Gabbard. She's a more conservative Democrat. Now, she's been marginalized in the race by Hillary Clinton essentially accusing her of being a Russian plant, which is ridiculous. But nonetheless, she's still tooling along. I suspect she'll stay in at least until Super Tuesday, because her state of birth, place of birth, American Samoa, votes on Super Tuesday. And I bet she wants to see how she does there.
Okay. And, I'm fascinated by the age, because, those sound quite large scores, right? And yet Trump is also relatively, senior as well. So is there something in the US that people sort of want to and trust more, aged people? Or what is it that's driving that?
Well, here's the amazing thing. America has been governed by baby boomers since 1992. Now, baby boom generation, or of course the post-war generation, born between 1946 and 1964. That's a narrow window, but we've had Bill Clinton, George W. Bush, Barack Obama, all baby boomers. Donald Trump, he's a very early baby boomer, born 1946, but also a baby boomer. Yet we only have, out of the eight Democratic candidates remaining, only two baby boomers in the race, and they're not major candidates. The two baby boomers are Amy Klobuchar, the senator from Minnesota, who's 59, and Tom Steyer, who's 62. All the major candidates are either pre-baby boomers or Gen Xers, or Gen Yers, I'm sorry, the millennials. That is, Pete Buttigieg is 38, Tulsi Gabbard's 38. They're actually skipping a whole generation. We, Gen Xers, those of us who were born after the baby boom, we don't matter. We're never going to become presidents in the United States. There's no major candidate who represents my own generation.
And what about this idea of, basically buying votes, as you could argue perhaps Bloomberg is through his advertising campaigns?
Well, you know, Amy Klobuchar likes to say you can buy an ad, but you can't buy a vote. Mm. And I think that's very true. And it's something we should have kept in mind with the whole controversy in 2016 over Russian vote buying. Russia didn't buy any votes in America. Russia may have placed ads. Most people would have ignored them. You can't buy a vote. You can only buy ad time. Now, we saw in 2016 how ineffective television advertising was for the Republican candidates. Donald Trump purchased virtually no advertising. Donald Trump, even though he says he's a billionaire, we don't know. He hasn't released his tax returns. People think because there's criminal activity. I personally think he hasn't released his tax returns because they show that he's not rich. And he would be embarrassed by that. But either way, Trump did not spend virtually nothing on advertising in 2016. And he beat out the big guns who were spending millions on advertising. So will Mike Bloomberg's, $400 million to date ad spend get him votes? We don't know. It's given him name recognition. People know who he is now. I mean, he's a former governor of New York, but former mayor of New York City, but is he likely to get votes just because people now know his name? We'll find out on Tuesday.
And to what extent is the campaign actually, a web-based, internet-based campaign these days?
Well, this is really kind of an amazing issue because Barack Obama was lauded in 2008 for his ability to reach out to young people via the internet. He was the candidate of the internet age, a charismatic person who was all over online, who had big database of supporters. Now, in 2020, Donald Trump is really leveraging the internet as he did in 2016. But of course, that's viewed as an evil manipulation of people through their social media feeds. So is it wonderful to reach directly to voters via the internet or evil to reach directly to voters via the internet? Well, take your pick. Bernie Sanders, of course, is very popular online. He has a big online army and a big base of email addresses and people who are connected to him on Facebook and Twitter. The other person who has a big online presence that you probably don't know much about is Tom Steyer. Tom Steyer originally was spending his money last year on an impeach Trump campaign. His number one message has been impeach Trump, impeach Trump, impeach Trump. That's what he made his name on, was that he was willing to spend his entire fortune to get Donald Trump impeached. Of course, Donald Trump was impeached and survived the trial. But as a result of that impeach Trump campaign, Tom Steyer developed a massive database. I think it was something like 9 million donors to his online campaign to impeach Trump. So when you have 9 million people in your online database, that's a really massive resource that you can use going into the campaign. And I'm sure that he's leveraging that in the campaign. It will also make him strong vice presidential material because if someone gets Tom Steyer, I mean, let's face it, Tom Steyer is unlikely to win the nomination. But if someone attracts him as a vice presidential candidate, he brings his database with him.
So to what extent is it about policies versus personality?
I think it's a lot more about policies than the press likes to make it. Policies are boring. I mean, we've been talking all this time about personalities, demographics. Policies are boring, but policies are what people vote on. People vote their pocketbook and people vote for things they want. I mean, let's remember, it's democracy. Democracy is not about having representatives who reflect us. It's about having representatives who do what we tell them to do. At least I'm on that side of the agency model of democracy. Now, Bernie Sanders, of course, we've already talked about, money from heaven to come down to the voters. That's made him very popular among young people who want that money from heaven, made him less popular among older people. He's talking about Medicare for all. Well, in the United States, people seem to think the U.S. has no national health care. The minute I turn 65, I have health insurance. in the United States. Everyone age 65 and over has health insurance. So it's really about health insurance for younger people. That's the issue. So among older voters, Sanders might not be popular because his main campaign pledge has been to tax older people. He wants to have a tax on billionaires. He wants to raise the estate tax and for billionaires up to 75%, but even for everyone else, you know, to bring back the estate tax. So that is unpopular among some elderly. In general, he's a raise taxes and spend more candidate. Joe Biden doesn't really stand for much. And I think that's been his big problem in these primaries. It's not his gaffes. I mean, the media focuses on him saying silly things and putting his arms around people. You know, some people have been uncomfortable that he always puts his arms around them. But really, he has no distinctive policy profile. He's been in the, he served in the Senate for decades, and then he was vice president. But as vice president, you don't make policy. You attend funerals. And that was really his job under Barack Obama. So he doesn't have much identity. Pete Buttigieg is a policy, you might think of him as a policy progressive, but not on taxation and spending issues. So he hasn't promised Medicare for all. You know, he's been vague about his fiscal policies, although on social issues, he's very progressive. Elizabeth Warren, everything's about consumers, protecting the consumer, protect the little guy, sock it to the rich. She actually has an even bigger estate tax plan than Bernie Sanders. She wants to tax anyone with wealth. And of course, people with wealth, which is most of us by the time we get to be 60, 70 years old, are, I think, a little skittish about Elizabeth Warren. Mike Bloomberg, public health is his number one thing. Of course, all the Democratic candidates are in favor of increased gun control. But Mike Bloomberg has a school of public health named after him, Bloomberg School of Public Health at my own alma mater, Johns Hopkins University. He would really push public health measures. But, you know, do Americans really want a prohibition on sugary drinks? You know, I mean, Americans like their 64-ounce big gulp sodas that you can get at 7-Eleven or, you know, and that was very unpopular in New York when he wanted to tax sugary drinks. And that kind of public health stance, while it's very sensible in many ways, may not be very popular, you know, once you get out into the campaign trail. So we have a, you know, a mixed bag on policies. They're all in favor of gun control. They're all in favor of expanding health insurance coverage in some way or other. They don't speak much about foreign affairs. Frankly, foreign policy is not a major determinant of U.S. elections. And a lot of people think that because they're Democrats and they're anti-Trump, they would be less aggressive on foreign policy than Trump. But in fact, the Democratic Party in general has taken a harder than Trump stance, for instance, on China, on Russia. So if you think that Trump is in constant conflict with China and Russia, don't look to the Democrats to change that. All the Democrats accuse Trump of being in the pocket of Vladimir Putin, so they would have to be harder on Russia in terms of sanctions and policy. And amazingly, they accuse Trump of being too soft on Xi Jinping, which, you know, in context of the trade war, foreigners or, you know, non-Americans might find this amazing. But Democrats have consistently called Trump as being soft on China. So don't expect any let up in U.S.-China relations as a result of any one of these Democratic candidates becoming president.
One of the things I've noticed is a bit of a shift in naming, isn't there?
Yeah, so this is one of the funniest things about 2020. You may remember back in 2016 or even in 2008, Hillary Clinton wanted to distance herself from Bill Clinton, reasonably enough. Now, she didn't choose to run as Hillary Rodham because no one knew who that was. So she was just Hillary. That was it. It's the first time a major candidate for the U.S. presidency has gone by her first name. Well, now you look across the Democratic field, all the candidates except Elizabeth Warren are first name candidates. If you look at their websites, their official bumper stickers, it's Bernie, Joe, Mayor Pete, Amy, Tom, Mike, and Tulsi for president. The only one is Elizabeth Warren, and that's probably because she didn't want to be called Liz. If she went by Liz, I suspect it would have been Liz 2020. Instead, it's Warren 2020. And it's kind of a strange evolution because of Trump, of course, no one is saying Donald 2020. It's Trump 2020. But on the Democratic side, we've seen this complete shift to the first name basis. And maybe that has to do with the reaching out to youth, but I think it really is just an artifact of Hillary.
That is really fascinating. And I noticed the switch, but I hadn't traced it back to Hillary. So she's still echoing down the ages.
If you want to know who the real emperor is, it's still Hillary Clinton. And remember that Democratic delegate count, the Democratic Party has come under a lot of criticism because a large number of their delegates are not chosen by the electorate, but have been selected, pre-selected by the party establishment itself. And of course, that party establishment, whatever you may think about Bernie 2020, the party establishment is still Clintonian, and she's going to have a big influence at that convention.
Oh, okay. And would you care to speculate on how you think Super Tuesday is going to play out, or would you prefer to leave that at the moment?
Look, we don't know. I don't do predictions. What I because no one knows. What I like to say is what's credible and what's not. So, of course, Bernie Sanders will do well on Super Tuesday. And you know, look, people think the election's – I had people telling me last week the election's already over, and now they're going to say, well, Joe Biden has done well, so now it's two people, Sanders and Biden. And that's just not true. I mean, on Super Tuesday, Sanders will do well nationally. Biden will make a presence nationally. Now, I don't know if he's that strong out west, but a lot of the more conservative Democratic states, he's popular among Southern Democrats. So Arkansas is voting on Super Tuesday. North Carolina is voting on Super Tuesday. Biden just won South Carolina. And North Carolina has very similar politics and, you know, very similar demographics. So he's probably going to do well in North Carolina. Virginia also votes in Super Tuesday. Virginia, we think of it as a southern state, but in fact, it's become a suburban state. Most of the votes in Virginia are suburban Washington, D.C. And as a result, Virginia is an insider politics state. It's like people voting in Canberra in Australia. They're very atypical of the electorate as a whole. And so given its kind of insiderness, Joe Biden might do well in Virginia. Pete Buttigieg is very charismatic. He's campaigning nationwide. You know, he might do very well in California, I would expect. In California is where the votes are. Elizabeth Warren, her home state of Oklahoma is voting, so she'll certainly stay in the campaign. She's a senator from Massachusetts, but she's originally from Oklahoma, and her deeper roots are in Oklahoma. She'll certainly try to win Oklahoma. That will give her enough to stay in the race, probably. She's not very popular nationally. You know, will she drop out? Will she take a symbolic victory in Oklahoma and then drop out? I have no idea. That's possible. Amy Klobuchar, her home state of Minnesota, is voting. She's a senator from Minnesota. People probably know Minnesota from the Vikings football team and from little else, but she was a prosecutor in Minneapolis, Minnesota, later the senator for the state. And, you know, presumably she'll win, or at least, you know, attempt to win Minnesota. So she'll have that boost going in. I mentioned Tom Steyer, he's popular in California. He has a good chance of getting a boost from Super Tuesday. The only ones who are, you know, I think almost certain to have their fate determined on Super Tuesday are Tulsi Gabbard. Now, Tulsi Gabbard is a really interesting person. She's a, you know, a combat veteran from two tours of duty in the Middle East, who is the only, you know, depending how you count, person of color, but the only seeming person of color still in the race. And, you know, she's young, she's charismatic, she's extremely well-spoken. This for her is probably a trial run, and we'll see her again in 2024 or 2028. She'll probably win American Samoa. That doesn't matter in electoral terms. She's not being included in the debates anymore. I think it's very likely she'll drop out after making her show on Super Tuesday, then she'll drop out. And the other one from Super Tuesday is crucial is the Phantom Menace, Mike Bloomberg. Mike Bloomberg has not been on the ballot in any state to date. He's hovering over the election with his raining down billions of dollars, but he hasn't been electorally tested. Now, if he fails miserably on Super Tuesday, maybe he'll decide to pull out and then put his money behind generic Democratic causes, behind, you know, building up the Democratic National Committee's resources, its online resources. I mean, let's not forget, he's the founder of Bloomberg Media, so he knows a thing or two about the online world. I think he would be a massive resource for the Democratic National Committee if he chose to drop out of the race and put his, not only his resources, but his considerable expertise behind the organizational effort. Of course, if he does well on Super Tuesday, he'll stay in and look to win the nomination. We'll see.
I appreciate your time today. I'd like to check back down the track as we follow the US, because I think it'll be a really interesting ride over the next few months. But let's see what happens.
We have three Tuesdays in a row. We have Super Tuesday this week. Then we have another big Tuesday of elections where on March 10th, 365 delegates are chosen, six states then. And then the final Tuesday that matters, March 17th, we have four states with 577 delegates being chosen. By the end of March, the Democratic primary should be down to one or two people. It should be decided, by that point.
Well, we'll keep a track on it, and please come back on the show and tell us what's going on, because I think our audience will be very intrigued.
Oh, thank you. I'd love to talk about it. And let me do one more plug, with apologies, for the book. It is The New Authoritarianism, Trump Populism, and the Tyranny of Experts. It's not a pro-Trump book. It's not an anti-Trump book. It's an anti-anti-Trump book. And if you can get your head around that, it's a nice short little book, inexpensive, named Best on Politics 2018 by The Wall Street Journal.
Well, congratulations on that. Send me the Amazon link and I'll post it in the comments below.
Great.
Thank you. Thank you for your time today, and we'll catch up again.
Thanks. Take care.